get a group photo. That group photo is going to be a screenshot of probably multiple pages of our Zoom session. So that'll happen again just before the second break. We'll ask everybody if you're comfortable to turn on your cameras, at least just for 60 seconds or so. So that gives you time if you want to, if you need to change what you're wearing. I've just got the basic black shirt, or if anybody wants to set a green screen behind them. But again, we'll do that just before the second break, okay? All right, so I'm going to go ahead and jump right in, and I will start with the main page. So first, let me share my screen. Give me one moment, share screen. Let's see, I think, nope, I keep sharing Padlet accidentally. All right, sorry. Back to figure out which one to share. Let's see. I think this is it. There we go. Okay, so just to walk through where to get to what I'm about to show you, if you start on the main workshop website, you can go to timetable. If you click on timetable, you'll see a breakdown, not just of yesterday, Monday, July 19th. If you scroll further down, you get to Tuesday. And we'll be starting off here with data sets and access. I have set my time to be local, so your time may show up differently. And then just to point out, here's the first break, and then the second break just before that is where we'll show the photos. So if you start here, data sets, online three, solutions and questions, there is a new link to Google Slides, solutions to offline challenge. And I will go through a little bit quicker the hands-on activity from yesterday. I've tried to provide links to everything so people can follow up with this. And then we'll go through the offline challenge from yesterday. And maybe there'll be some discussion about both the physics and accessing these data. So let me go into present mode. And let me turn on my laser pointer. Okay. And if anybody could give like a thumbs up or anything, if they see my screen, I just want to make sure I'm actually sharing the right screen. If anybody, thank you very much. All right, perfect. Awesome. Thank you, Emmanuel. All right. So let's go through these. There was a hands-on activity yesterday. It was basically reviewing the concepts, trying to encourage people to go back through and read a little bit more closely in the event that I may have gone too fast. I'll try to move this out of the way. If I went too fast, just to remind people how to get to the starting page, how you select the CMS data, you know, reminding people some of the ideas about what is the energy, the difference between collision and simulated data, selecting AOD, and then AOD simulated data, just reminding people how to get to maybe some of the specific processes and how to understand the information. And as we went through that, we found out that some of these data sets are actually not accessible. We have records for them so that if people wanted to, they could request access to them. But it means there may be some limited information if you want to know the details of how they were produced. But in all events, you can always contact the open data organizers through the web pages. So again, just to kind of walk you through what these slides are for the hands-on activity. Can you get to the starting page? Can you select CMS data? I provided links, just remind people where the portal is. And then if you select CMS, you come to a page that looks something like this. This link is just accessing that, where you can see that experiment equals CMS has been selected. But of course, you don't need to type out the full link. You can just select it by going to CMS here. The bulk of the CMS data was released for the 2010, 2011, and 2012 run periods. That was run one. The collision energies for these are 7 or 8 TeV. And as Kati mentioned, I think in the opening session, there will be data coming for run two, the 13 TeV collisions. The difference between collision and simulated data. Collision data is, I use this jargon, even though it's probably not the right one to use, it's the real data that comes off of the real CMS detector, not the simulated detector. Simulated detectors, Monte Carlo data, we've actually simulated not just the underlying physics process at the femtoscale, but what these particles are doing as they move through a simulation of the CMS detector. And at some point, both of these data sets look the same because they've gone through the same processing. And so you can use your same analysis software to look for electrons, for example, in both collision data or simulated data. To remind people what the AOD format is, that's analysis object data, emphasis on the analysis. This was supposed to be a level of processing that most analysts would be able to use for their studies. It has a lot of information, and even within the collaboration, we tend to use smaller, slimmed down versions of AOD. But for the open data, since people may be looking for many, many different processes, many different types of studies, it was decided to release the kind of more complete version of this process data. If you go through this, we discussed that this first field in between the slashes references the trigger. So mu eg, mu had, single photon, and so on. And if you click on these links, you can find out what they're doing. If you go into any one of these, you get a bit more information. So if you were to click on this one, this is the mu eg primary data set. How were these data selected? All of these records have a field. Events were selected because of the presence of two different types of high energy particles, such as a muon and an electron or photon. And the reason why it's an electron or photon is because you're looking for energy deposited in a detector, electromagnetic calorimeter, that's a first order when you're actually just triggering on it. You don't know whether or not it was an electron or a photon. You know that it was something that tends to interact electromagnetically. And then at later processing, you can decide whether or not it was an electron or a photon. I ask you to select the heavy gauge bosons, find a Z prime sample. So if you click the on-demand data sets, if you scroll further down, you find this filter by category, and you find these very specific physics processes, various exotica, standard model physics, Higgs physics, both the standard model Higgs and beyond the standard model. And you can select heavy gauge bosons and find that there's Z prime samples. We went through this and found out that maybe not all of the information is available. You can learn more about the naming schemes of these. All of the records have a link to about CMS simulated data sets, where you can learn how we tried to label these. This is in some sense, some of the provenance, how it was processed, Pythia 6, Teola for any tau decays, as well as information about like the mass range in this example right here. And you can also find out how many events were in that sample and how much disk space it occupies. So in this particular example, there are 956,164 events. It occupies 361 gigabytes. And this should give you some sense of the amount of data that's produced. This is one very specific physics process, just the simulated data, and it's already 360 gigabytes. So it's a significant amount of data that you have access to. I'm going to see something up here. I can't see the chat as much. So I'm gonna ask the other facilitators to just, if you feel that there's a question that I have missed, if one of you can just like chime in and interrupt me, and we can address it. But I just saw that there is chats, but for some reason I'm not able to access the chats right now. So again, if any of the other facilitators feel there's something I should stop, just interrupt me. I'm good with that. And there is perhaps more information in some of the data sets for the LHE files, but you may not be able to access all of the LaHouche files. That's really the tree level, almost Feynman diagram points of the process. Okay. I'm going to pause there for a second. I'm going to stop sharing so that I can see the chat to see if there are any questions at this point. There was a question about the on-demand data sets. And yes, I believe that those are always the simulated data, as Julie said as well. That's my understanding. Any other questions about that? All right, back into the fray. Let's go back. Let's see if, here we go. There's a question about what does the U mean in Z prime T to TTU? Jerry, that's a great question. And when I was putting this exercise together, I spent a fair amount of time trying to figure out what the U means, and I could not do it. That's when I wound up trying to find the LaHouche files or even dump the generated data. And that's when I realized, like, oh, this is an on-demand data set. I actually can't access that real low level information. So I don't know what the U is. I would defer to any of my colleagues who know what the U means in Z prime T to TTU. Anybody know? Sorry, Jerry, you reached the edge of my knowledge. Someone said the data sets are gauge data. Is there any online cloud-based space where we can work on data sets without downloading this huge data in my laptop? Yes, through the virtual environment, you could skim subsets of the data so that you only have to download smaller subsets. But on Thursday, you'll be learning about how to do analysis in the cloud. And so that is Wednesday night, or Wednesday night for me. You will be preparing for a tutorial on Thursday where you're going to do this on Google Cloud. And it's going to feel like you're part of the future. It's kind of amazing. It's a good question, Mahir. And let me again apologize for anybody whose names I mispronounce. Feel free to correct me if I really mangle it. Any other questions? Okay, let me again jump back into this solutions. Okay, so the offline challenge, I posited this situation where you have come up with a new theory, this automaton. You want to see if you can discover it in the data, and then you're going to have this like big colloquium seminar at CERN showing the results of your discovery. This particle, the automaton, let's see if we can move this out of the way, will decay to two same sign charged leptons. So those are electrons, muons, or taus, and two jets of any flavor. So that means they could be B jets, but they could also be light quark jets. They could be charmed, strange, what have you. The predicted mass of this particle is in the 300 to 500 GeV range. You plan on looking for it in the CMS open data. Only consider the 2012 run period. And the first thing you want to think about are what triggers are sensitive to this process. How many events might that give you? What standard model processes might contribute to the background? So we're going to talk about physics for a bit, because it really does map onto how you use the open data. And then I give you a very specific sample and to try to consider if that's a significant background. And the first question you want to think about is what triggers might be most sensitive to this process. We are not going to be able to teach you everything in this workshop. We're not going to be able to teach you everything about the physics. This is why, you know, particle physics PhDs take 4 or 5 years, sometimes more. But if you look at this process, the way that I would have written down is your automaton particle decays to 2 same sign leptons. So they could both be plus, they could both be minus. Let me get my little laser pointer back on. And then 2 jets. So the way I would tend to write this down is lepton, lepton, jet, jet. And so our triggers, you probably want a trigger that's looking for 2 leptons. There are some triggers where you might have like a large amount of like hadronic deposition, but probably the easiest thing to pick out is 2 or more charged leptons. And there's a few ways you could approach this. There is, if you poke around, the hope was that people would go through some of these triggers and read a little bit more about them. There is the μeg. They are selected because of the presence of 2 different types of particles, such as a muon and an electron. The double mu parked, at least 2 high energy muons. The double electron, at least 2 high energy electrons. And then there's the tau parked as well. We have the presence of more than 1 isolated tau with maybe an energetic jet, or at least 1 isolated tau and high missing transverse energy. Now, these triggers do not guarantee that you will also have 2 jets, but it is not, none of these triggers are eliminating any data that have jets. So what ideally you get is events that have at least 2 leptons. There's nothing in this about whether or not they are same sign or not. And then within the μeg data set, you may look for events then that are plus plus or minus minus for the lepton, plus 2 or more jets. And then you could start looking at things like the invariant mass or anything like that. But this is how you start thinking about your triggers. Again, this trigger is not going to get exactly what you want. But you don't want it to eliminate necessarily anything. You want these to all contain at least your data. So if you wanted to know how many records there are, you can click on them. And what you find is that for 2012, there were 2 run periods that have been released. There is a B run period and a C run period. And it looks like I should have put them in more consistent order. So again, for 2012, for each of these triggers, there are 2 sub-run periods. There is this C, January 22nd, 2013, which is probably when it was processed, and this B, 22nd, January 2013, all version 1. There are 14 million events in one of them, 20 million events for the other, just for the μeg sample. That occupies 4 and 6 terabytes of data respectively, which goes to the question that was raised earlier. You do not want to have to download this to your laptop. Instead, what you want to do is you want to do your processing, either small amounts of it that you download to your laptop. So some very restrictive analysis using the physics objects that Julie will be talking about later, or you want to set up a cloud computing environment that you'll learn on Thursday. So you see that there's, right, so here's about 34 million events, here's about 66 million events, this is again on the order of 56, and so on, this is 60, 100, over 100 million events. However, you have to be careful that you do not double count your data. And again, we cannot teach you everything in this workshop, but I will point out one thing to be aware of. Some events may pass 2 or more triggers. So events that have 2 muons or 2 electrons, those generally do not appear. Those generally do not overlap, although you could have some events with 2 muons and 2 electrons. But for example, this μeg sample here, this is looking for at least 1 muon and at least 1 electron. If something passed a trigger where there were 2 muons, there could also have been an electron in this sample. So these are not exclusive triggers. generally what you will find analysts do is they pick one, maybe two triggers that they will use for this analysis, and then use that trigger for both their data set and the Monte Carlo. And if you're using two triggers, again, you want to be careful that you're not doing something that might accidentally overcount. And so you will see here this theme throughout the workshop. It's really up to you to determine what data samples to use, how to optimize your data, what are the best triggers. That is the work of the analyst. There is no one size fits all approach. There is no one and only one way to optimize your data. That's where the fun comes in, is trying to solve all these issues. But I think it's important to note that these triggers are not always mutually exclusive. And that's actually kind of an important point. I'm going to stop sharing for just a second. Is there any questions about that point or what I mean when I say that these are not exclusive processes? Oh, there was actually a discussion about that. And it looks like I started. Is there a, oh, thank you, Kati, for answering that. Okay. All right, back into this. Okay, so what background might process? I know some of you are more familiar with the physics processes than others, so I thought it would be useful to kind of review what the physics is. So you want to remind yourself of what, or learn right now, what does the top quark decay to? What does a W boson decay to? What is a Z boson? What is the Drell-Yan process? These are fairly common backgrounds that we deal with. So a top quark decays at the Feynman level to a W plus and a B, if this is a top quark. It does not always have to be a B, but the chance of the quark not being a B is very, very small. And so most of the time when you think about this process, you think about a top going to a W and a B, and then the W decays one of two ways. The W decays to either a charged lepton and a neutrino, or to a quark and a quark, which we observe as a jet and a jet in the detector. This is referred to as the leptonic decay, and this is the hadronic decay. And so we really think of our detector, as being what we observe is a jet that we can tag as a B that we can identify that has a displaced vertex, and then a charged lepton and some missing energy from the neutrino, or three jets in which one of them has been identified as a B jet. Most of the time, if there is a top produced, there is also an anti-top quark. There is single tops that are produced through the decay of an off-shell W. But to first order, you can think about there's always an anti-top when there is a top. And so this manifests in the detector as two B jets, two charged leptons, and two neutrinos. These are oppositely charged, which I'll point out now. Two B jets, two non-B jets, and then a charged lepton and a neutrino, or two B jets and four other jets. This down here is the hadronic decay. This is referred to as the leptonic decay. And this would be the semi-leptonic decay, where one of the tops has decayed hadronically and the other has decayed semi-leptonically. And so right off the bat, you may not see anything that immediately maps to your ultimaton decay, but I will point out that inside the jets are charged leptons. You can have pions that are produced that decay to a muon. You can have other charged particles in the jet that decay leptonically. And so you can have charged leptons inside your jet cone. Those are generally identified as part of the jet. So while we won't go through the details for your analysis, you may want to look for what are referred to as isolated leptons. Leptons are that are removed and not in the cone that you have defined as your jet. But those are details for further down in your analysis. This is just first order thinking about what some of your backgrounds might be. If you want to think about W or Z boson decays, the W can decay, it looks like I've duplicated here, I don't know why I copied this twice, but the W will decay to charged lepton and a neutrino, or two jets in such a way that charge is conserved. Z decays to a oppositely charged lepton, charged leptons, or neutrinos, which are missing energy, or a couple of jets. And you'll see a number of samples where you have W plus and W minus. I can't off the top of my head, I can't picture right now exactly what the production process is, but we generally have a number of events where you have two Ws that are oppositely charged, in which case you can get two oppositely charged leptons, a couple of neutrinos, or jet, charged lepton and neutrino, four jets. Z events, you can write it out. And then I will admit I ran out of steam writing down all the possible combinations for WZ events, but the WZ can be a significant background process. And I point out that there is, you can have two two same sign leptons when you have Ws and Zs. Same thing with the ZZs right here. Now, in these processes where you have WWZZ, you're not necessarily going to get only a, you know, two Ws or only two Zs. You can have QCD effects where you know, your quarks or the gluons in the initial state may radiate. And so even in these types of events, you can have jets that are observed. And so just because I've written out four leptons here, does not mean that you will see only four leptons in the data, or in the, sorry, in the simulation. The Drell-Yan process is similar. It's an interaction where you have two quarks that interact and couple to an off-shell photon or an off-shell Z, which then decay to opposite sign leptons, to charged leptons. This is just an example of the cross-section measured and predicted for the electron and muon channels. And so you get a lot of opposite sign leptons. You get a peak at the Z. And then notice here, the scale changes. This is between 2 and 600. So you will see a number of samples designated as DY. They generally produce opposite sign. And so trying to figure out what the standard model samples are, now I've moved away from the trigger and I'm just thinking about my analysis. Ideally, the top and the anti-top are mostly rejected if you require same sign leptons. Although you could get leptons from jets, and it's up to you to make sure that these are isolated leptons. The W plus W minus is generally rejected by same sign leptons, maybe, but it's always good to check. But your WZ and the ZZ could be background. Your Drell-Yan could be rejected by same sign leptons. This does not guarantee that there is no background from your top and anti-top. This is a fairly large cross-section. And so, you know, it is worth always trying to study some of the larger backgrounds, even if you don't think that they're immediately going to contribute. A large background that you can reduce by 99%, that 1% still might be big enough that it's a real concern. And if you go through, if you go to the standard model simulation samples, the AOD sim, you will find quite a few of these in there. For example, if you go to the standard model electroweak samples, I've provided links to this, you will see a number of things that are designated as WZ or ZZ. You'll see some WWs there. And I have provided links if you want to click on them and learn more. So this is a simulated sample of ZZ to two electrons, two muons. So it has been constructed in such a way that it requires one of the Zs to decay to E plus E minus, and the other Z to decay to mu plus mu minus. Which brings me to another point about these samples. Let's see, maybe, oh, I guess I didn't actually write any text, but let me mention it here. Wait, hang on, did I? Yeah, okay, so let me go back. I will mention this on the next one about what this 2E2U means. I gave you a link to a very specific sample to think about what that sample is and whether or not it could be a significant background. It's a top plus anti-top plus jet. So this TT jets means that there's a top and an anti-top, but there's also jets that come from QCD processes. So for example, radiative gluons that then hadronize from either the initial or final state. The top and anti-top decay semi-leptonically, which means that one of them will decay hadronically. So you will still get three jets from one of them, and then the jet, the charged lepton and the neutrino from the other. So this doesn't immediately seem like it could be a contributing background. However, if you are unlucky, there may be a lepton from one of these jets that does not get, that actually decays in such a way that it's outside the cone. So while it's unlikely, because the top anti-top is a fairly large cross-section, you may find yourself running studies to see how many pass the trigger or your initial cuts. Again, this is just to emphasize, there is no one size fits all. At this workshop, we cannot teach you how to do a full PhD quality level analysis, but we like to point out some of the gotchas. The other thing I wanted to mention is just like how the triggers, there's an issue with double counting. There's also a potential issue with double counting in the simulated data sets. The fact that this TT jets, you've required these semi-leptonic, I think like MAD graph decays. If you have a TT jets sample where it has not required the semi-leptonic decays, you will actually have this data set in that larger data sample. And this is because someone may want to study very, very specifically the semi-leptonic decays with a larger amount of statistics, but it means that if you're trying to do some acceptance correction, some sort of efficiency study, and you're using these different data sets, you've got to be careful again, not to double count, that this is a subset of some other data set, but it's there for people who want a more targeted study of particular processes. So that is, those are the solutions. They are now posted. There was a question about fake taus from TT and QCD. Yeah, that's a great question, Giles. If you're doing some study with taus, right, a taus kind of looks like a jet, except for very specific decays. It's a cluster of energy, usually with fake particles. That is an issue. There are real taus from top quark decays, right? If the top quark decays leptonically, you will get a real tau in there, and that could be mistaken for a jet. And so as Julie was alluding to yesterday, in many of the physics objects, you have these knobs that you can turn. Is it like a tight identification? Am I really, really sure that it's a tau? You may have to crank that down, but you might throw out some good taus as well. This will affect your sensitivity perhaps to your signal. So it's a good question. Any other questions? We can always continue this. If you have any other questions that pop into your head in the next 5 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 days, you can use the Mattermost channel for the dataset scouting to post those questions. Again, these slides are now posted on the conference website, so you can review them. Just out of curiosity, there's no shame if you don't raise your hand. I'm just curious. This is totally, totally fine. How many people spent some time trying to go through some of these exercises yesterday? Thank you, Jean. Thanks. Oh my gosh, that's awesome. Anything more than one, I would have been happy with. So that's great. Oh my gosh, look at all these hands. I'm so excited to see that people were trying this out. So many hands. I actually thought it was going to be like zero or one. Not that I don't believe in you, but it's just a tremendous amount of work. So I really appreciate that at the end of a long day, people spent some time going through this. Okay, so I think I've run to the end of my time. I'm going to hand it over to Julie. Again, if there are any questions that come up, please post them in the Mattermost channel for this exercise. Thank you everybody for your engagement. I will be seeing you online over the course of today and tomorrow. I'm gonna hand it over to Julie. Julie, I'm gonna stop this recording and then start it again just before you start, okay?
Great.
All right, thank you everybody. Bye-bye, good night, good luck. Stop the cloud recording.